two more members for a work session, and as soon as we can find them, we will have a work session. But now we're going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 199. Do we have anyone signed up? Are those here who would like to come and testify on Senate Bill 199? Helen Hill from Tillamook. Good morning.
Good morning.
Come on up and sit down. And if you would just identify yourself for the record and give us your testimony, please.
Is this on?
Yes, it is.
Okay. My name is Helen Hill, and first of all, thank you, Senators and Representatives, for the opportunity to testify today on this bill. I live in Halem, Oregon. In 1998, I was the chief petitioner for Ballot Measure 58, the Adoptee Rights Initiative, which passed by a substantial majority of Oregonians and was enacted last summer after 19 months of litigation. And I am here today to urge you to vote no on Senate Bill 199. And though I'm certain that the sponsors and supporters of SB 199 have sincere, very heartfelt motives at heart, the bill has a lot of irretrievable problems that aren't apparent at first glance. First of all, the people of Oregon, in passing Measure 58 by a wide majority, underlined their belief that every citizen should have a right to access the true information about their birth. But less than 1 year after the enactment of Measure 58, the legislature is now proposing a new law which would create a significant loophole. Senate Bill 199 encourages someone, anyone, it doesn't specify who, to leave an infant with no questions asked and with no attempt to provide the most skeletal identity information for that individual for an entire lifetime. Although the Safe Haven Bill, as it's called, it sounds like a very good idea and has a lot of emotional appeal, upon closer scrutiny and through observation of other states who have enacted this law, it is doubtful if such a bill as it is written could actually save the life of an infant. In the isolated, infrequent cases where women kill their infants after they're born or endanger them, it's clear that these women are desperate, frightened, ignorant, even criminally insane. To imagine that these same women could be capable of making a prearranged, rational decision to drive to a drop-off point and relinquish a baby under the terms of SB 199 just doesn't make sense. What SB 199 does do is create a yawning potential for abuse. By creating a drop-off point for infants with no questions asked, it's inviting anything to happen. Just last week, for example, in Dallas, Texas, an infant was dropped off at a fire station, safe haven point, not by the baby's mother, but by the girlfriend of the baby's father, posing as the mother. The frantic mother alerted police, and a 3-day search ensued. There's no evidence that SB 199 will prevent the problem it nobly sets out to solve. In Florida, as well as Texas, where similar safe haven laws have been passed, roughly the same number of babies have been murdered or abandoned, none in safe places. What SB 199 does do is provide and encourage a quick fix abandonment scheme for mothers who might have sought a more responsible solution, such as legal adoption. SB 199 encourages abandonment instead of going to the heart of the problem and offering a deeper, more compassionate and well-thought-out solution. Consider, for example, a safe haven rescue program for both mother and child. Providing a safe haven for only the child is like saying, we don't care what happens to you, just leave your baby with us. Further, SB 199 attempts to solve a problem that's not currently facing Oregon, and in doing so, I believe it will cause more problems than it ever intended to address. SB 199 ignores the fundamental right to identity just established by voter initiative. It creates a system where secrecy is encouraged, which creates a system ripe with abuse. We have been fighting the consequences of secrecy for years in adoption reform. Personally, I've had my combat boots on this issue for years and years. Finally, consider the wisdom of spending taxpayers' money in an extremely tight fiscal year to advertise and essentially teach Oregonians how to abandon an infant. I implore you to vote no on SB 199 as it is written. We need more time to develop sane and appropriate amendments and provisions. Please don't respond to the emotionalism of this bill without considering the realistic consequences. And I know I speak for the large coalition of adoptees, adopted parents, birth parents, and adoptive agencies throughout Oregon when I say that this bill, as written, has a lot of irretrievable problems. Fear and a few incidents should not drive a child welfare policy. H.L. Mencken said that for every problem, there's a solution that's neat and simple and wrong. I believe that's exactly what we have here. I've included in my written testimony to you this morning a series of newspaper articles from around the country attesting to the inadequacy of similar bills, as well as a collection of quotes from people in other states who have thought long and hard about the problem of a safe haven bill. Thank you for your time, committee members.
Thank you, Ms. Hill. Representative Butler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I know that California, and you've got some information from California, has a safe haven bill. Do we know the number of youngsters who are being affected in a state, in those states where safe haven bills are presently enacted, Ms. Hill?
Well, I do have one article from the Associated Press about Florida, which has had a bill for about a year now. California's bill, I believe, was just passed this session. We don't really have any accurate statistics. But in Florida, I think the article's in here, I think there were 11 babies abandoned, and none of them in safe places. And that's about the same number that had been abandoned before. The publicity marketing campaign, in order to have an impact for people that are really going to be harming their infants, to get the word out about these safe haven places, it would cost quite a bit of money, and I think that the money could be better spent to help both the mother and the child.
Follow up, Madam Chair.
So
we know that in Florida, 11 babies have been discarded in unsafe places. Do we know how many have been actually brought to those, and we're assuming that it's identical, that is, that an infant may be left at any authorized facility in the physical custody of an agent, employee, doctor, other medical professional working at an authorized facility where the infant can be brought safely, and indicates also that the child has no evidence of abuse. Is that identical to the Florida law?
Yes, sir, I believe it is. I believe most of the safe haven laws that are proliferating across the country are essentially the same.
So do we know, follow-up, do we know how many children have been safely brought to these various places?
I don't believe we do. That's part of the problem. There's no statistical evidence, and these bills keep being passed, and nobody really knows what's happening out there, and it's hard to answer. They just started cropping up about a year and a half ago.
Finally, Madam Chair, relative to the fiscal, Ms. Hill, do you believe that these young mothers who would be want to leave their child or new infant in the care of the unauthorized facility, do you believe that they may receive any other notice or public services where they might become aware of the safe surrender program?
I'm not sure I understand the question.
Do they receive other services where they might be able to read about?
I see.
Public health clinic or anything of that nature. Other services that they might receive where these kinds of things are posted, similar to other public notices.
Right. I understand your question now. I think that the women that would be receiving those sort of services, where they would come in contact with information about these safe haven drop-off points, those are precisely the women that would probably not be planning to murder their baby or doing it in a moment of utter hopelessness. These are women that are already making some sort of plan. They're going out there. They're getting help. I think for them, providing a drop-off point such as this just precludes them going ahead and making a very responsible decision to go ahead with a full legal adoption, which then provides the child with identity information. So no, I don't think. I think that the women who are actually harming their babies and abandoning them in dumpsters are women that aren't going anywhere for help. They're not identified anywhere through the system.
I think the main thing this bill has already had a substantive committee hearing where a lot of these issues have been discussed, and the one thing we need to determine is if there will be a fiscal impact. And we have someone here that will testify. But what I need to do is, if there's no further questions, Helen, I thank you very much for your testimony and also for your articles you've attached. And I'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 199 and open a work session on Senate Bill 5532, the Construction Contractors Board and Landscape Contractors Board.
Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the committee, what is being passed out right now is the LFO recommendations, and
Senator. We'll have you come up. We will now close the work session on Senate Bill 5532, which I just opened 1 second ago, and we will open a public hearing and possible work session on Senate Bill 199. Good morning, Senator. Come forward, please. Senator Courtney, for your information, as you know, we're a Ways and Means Committee, and we have had some previous testimony from Helen Hill, who is in opposition to this bill. But what I'm sharing with everyone that is concerned about this bill is this is a substantive committee, in a Ways and Means Committee, and we understand that you've already had a very good and full hearing in regarding this in a substantive committee.
Oh. Thank you, Chair Frano and members. I wish I had been here when remarks were made because I didn't hear them. And that was the first dissent ever on the bill. We had a 2-hour hearing in the Judiciary Committee, and a tremendous number of witnesses showed up on this bill, and we worked it and worked it and worked it. I assume you know what the bill is. You don't need to have. I'm Peter Courtney, State Senator District 17, Salem Kaiser. This is called the Safe Surrender Baby Abandonment Bill. It's been referred to by different groups and organizations across the country. Under the proposed law, the parent of a newborn infant under 30 days old can bring the baby to a designated safe haven where the baby will receive medical attention and care. The individual who surrenders the baby that is not abused will avoid criminal charge of abandonment. I might also add, for those of you in the room who have ever served on a judiciary committee or will, the District Attorney's Association's worked with us very closely on that part of it. So there are many stakeholders in putting this legislation together. With this bill, we were talking about keeping babies from being thrown away or abandoned in the cold, and I know that sounds dramatic. You think perhaps I've been known for histrionics, but this is happening. Babies, newborn babies, are being put in dumpsters, and they are being abandoned. And I think it goes without saying that if you're a newborn baby, it seems to me it's been a while since I was one, but you're not going to make it if you're put in those kinds of circumstances. This is happening. I mean, it's happened in Oregon. It is happening. And with this bill, we're talking about keeping babies from being thrown away. As I say, this bill is designed to provide a means to those mothers or fathers who do not want their baby, who have hidden or denied their pregnancy, who cannot bear the shame or struggle a baby would propose. These are mothers or fathers for whom there is not one profile, not one general description or lifestyle choice. These are people from many walks of life who find themselves in a crisis with seemingly no place to turn. This bill has not only saved the lives of newborn babies, it may reduce the anguish the mother, father, family may feel as a result of a discarded or dead newborn, allowing them to move on. Now, I'm not going to read further than my testimony ahead, because I don't like to read the testimony. I just want to point out that I was amazed when we got into the public hearing on this bill. There is really no profile of what's going on. You can't say this group or that group. They're all walks of life of people who've experienced this and had this going on. This bill should it pass, and it did pass the Senate, there hasn't been, it was without dissent, is would make Oregon in the forefront, because rather than be just hospitals, we've allowed other places the baby could also be dropped off on. And as I say, the health division participated with this, the attorneys participated with this, other groups. This is the only time since I've been in the Oregon legislature at the public hearing where Right to Life and Planned Parenthood, and I pause now, I still am in shock, came to the table and support the legislation. So, you know, because we were dealing with something here that gets very close to controversy, so be upfront about it. And even that happened. So, and I think in your materials, there should be a list there of the different players who came and who they represent. There's no opposing testimony. And I say, I know you've been presented with a sheet of paper of all the people who testified over a period of 2 hours. We also brought up with the woman from California who was a native Oregonian, I didn't know at the time, because she has created the Garden of Angels where there are 50 abandoned babies that have been, that she has buried. And she has worked extensively in California. And when she started out, there wasn't a chance legislation would pass. She went before the Senate Judiciary Committee, ironically, our own, that is, we, that's where this bill started. In California, didn't think they had a chance, only that they eventually embraced it. They embraced it wholeheartedly. She gave riveting testimony. She has visited with the young women in jail who have done this, who have been discovered, and gone over it just to find out why. She's really, not in an accusatory way, she really brought an incredible riveting testimony about the whole thing. So we went that extra step. I had her brought up from California to give testimony, and I think it's a good bill. It's a well-thought-out bill. You know, the bottom line in this is the child, the baby. That's it. You can always say, you know, adoption-wise, we'll get to know who their parents are if you allow this. All I say is, well, if you're not alive, you're not going to get to know who your parents are. So unless one understands that the bottom line is the child's going to be in a dumpster and you're trying to keep the child from going in a dumpster or being abandoned in the cold, then you can get into all these adult things that we do about, well, what about this agency or what about this, what about that. This has worked in other parts of the country. You know, it is working. The babies are being abandoned, not in large number. It will not apply to a large number of children. We know that. We know that up front. We can't save the world. I can't save the world. Worked hard on this, Madam Chair. I'm sorry we had to. I know you're involved in heavy-duty Ways and Means things. I can't even identify Ways and Means because I should never serve on Ways and Means and be allowed to serve on night. Well, the chair knows the 95 session, and I'm still in recovery over that withdrawal, and so I apologize, but the bill came here, I won't get into that, it does not have a physical, or however you say that word, I don't even know how to say that word, I have trouble, to me it means how good a shape you're in, so it does not have a monetary impact extent that it will be a problem. I have that from certified people behind me. You don't have to believe me, but the health division who swear, they do it on the Bible, they go to mass to say it, it does not have, that they're willing to do this without being worried about Ways and Means.
Thank you, Senator. And you did a marvelous job serving on Ways and Means for me in the 95th.
Yeah, that's a little story behind that, Minister, in terms of the Speaker of the House, Deb Carno, in terms of that little.
It's enough that
thank you, Madam Chair. I just had one question of Senator Courtney, thank you very much for coming. And this is the same question I asked of Ms. Hill from Tillamook, who has given us multiple pages requesting a no vote on Senate Bill 199. Ms. Hill was asked, do you believe that any of these mothers of these abandoned infants might be mothers which would come into contact with public notices or public statements or postings of an opportunity where they might be able to see that there is an alternative to dumping a baby in a dumpster? You believe, I recognize that your testimony indicates that there is no single one profile, no single one general description of lifestyle resources in many walks of life of these desperate young women. But do you believe that they will come into contact during any portion of their life before this child will be born that might give them information in a public fashion about the availability of the potential for a safe surrender of this newborn child?
Chair Clyde, I'll represent Butler. The issue of getting out information on this is critical. There's no question about that. And that's where the health division and others are going to have to work very hard to be creative so we don't have a financial impact. That we struggle with that because the notice has to get out. It is getting out in Texas. It is getting out in California. It is getting out in Mobile, Alabama, where this thing originated years ago as a result of a journalist. It is getting out in Ohio. I'm just giving you examples. It is getting out enough that they're bringing in some children. We will be challenged here because we're not going to allocate a lot of money. In fact, we're not going to allocate money in the Health Division budgets to do billboards and do other things, and I understand that. And we know that because you can have a bill that nobody knows about, and so they're still being put in dumpsters or abandoned in the cold. I understand that. We discussed this. We know that that's, I think, our biggest challenge. I really think that's our biggest challenge, given the resource area. But I think the media is paying attention to this. Health Division is very creative in terms of their world by having it, allowing it in hospitals and fire stations and police stations. That's all. We've expanded the places they can be dropped off. That all creates a number of people talking to other people, talking to other people. Bill, did you know in this state, did you know? So we think that by word of mouth, we're in a better, we are positioned better, Representative Butler, than even other states who said just hospitals. And I'm not trying to knock other states because they went first. But there's no question, Representative Butler, if the word doesn't get out, this is a feel-good piece of legislation, but it will miss the mark. So I want to be upfront with you, but we're working hard on it, and we're just hoping that if this passes and is signed into law, that we will be in a position that, that some poor person will know this is an option.
Go ahead, Representative.
Thank you very much, Madam Chairman. I tend to agree wholeheartedly with Senator Courtney. I believe this, and I may be just old-fashioned enough and have two beloved daughters myself and a couple of daughters-in-law, but I know that these young women talk, and they talk and talk and talk. And
careful.
These are things that, these are the kinds of things that young girls in their prepubescent and progressive time of life would talk about, that Oregon is a state where you could bring. I happen to live on a border with a state where this would not be allowed, and I think that we would be the beneficiary of some of these children left at the police or fire stations. And if we didn't spend anything and the word got out and we were able to save one youngster, I think our time would have been well spent for this entire session.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Courtney, did during the time that you were receiving testimony in the substantive committee, did representatives of any of the small rural fire departments come and speak to you in terms of the financial burden? And I don't want to equate the life of a child with a financial burden, but I just wondered whether or not you took any testimony from any of the small fire departments that might be the recipients about whether or not they're equipped to deal with someone handing them perhaps a sick newborn child. Did that come up at all?
Representative Clono, Chair Clono, Representative Johnson, it's interesting. We did not receive testimony at the public hearing, but we actually discussed this issue. That is the fact that you have volunteer fire departments in terms of that. And in the long run, I think what we decided is that when you think of fire stations, if this happens, they're going to know what to do with the baby. And we concluded that if you're a firefighter and you're a volunteer firefighter and it comes into your station, you're going to immediately, just through comments, they're in a better position to know than just having it, you know, in a dumpster. Plus, in these rural areas, their fire station some places is closer than a hospital or something like that. So that's the reason we did not want to say no to fire stations, for this very reason. The availability of fire stations was greater in some parts of our state that they had to go all the way to a hospital. But we did discuss it. I think the feeling was we had confidence when we think of firefighters, at least when I think of them, that they have some medical skills or at least knowledge, and they have the right instincts, Representative Johnson, if they found themselves with a baby.
One other question, Madam Chair. And I know we're supposed to be dealing with the fiscal aspects of this, but having not had the opportunity to chat about the bill, I had one other question. How much testimony did you take when you discussed this about how expeditiously the child would be made available for adoption? Rather than having a child come into the system and perhaps languish in temporary care before there was a mechanism to get the child into the hands of loving parents that wanted it.
Representative Carno, Chair Carno, Representative Johnson, the belief was that it would be just like it is today. Just like it is today. The same, all those players were here. Children came before our committee that the same processes which would take effect today if a child was, you know, found a situation, in other words, they would move as quickly as they did ordinarily. And that's what was said. I mean, that's how it was explained to me. They were not threatened by that. Any of the state agencies in terms of this are dealing with it as quickly. The same processes of giving notice, et cetera, would take place.
And one last question, Senator Carno. My dear sister is adopted, so adoption is close in our family. The one thing that I think haunts adoptive parents is the possibility that a birth mother would at some point in time resurface. And given that there is a certain anonymity to this process, was there any testimony about the severing of parental rights that would allow the new family to form without the specter of a birth mother returning and wanting a child that had been given up anonymously?
Chair Clono, Representative Johnson, yes, there was. In fact, that was one of the things that caused some concerns. But the theory, there was great sensitivity to this. The existing laws will take effect that are in the state of Oregon. We're not trying to overcome those. You do need to know that the bottom line is, where we finally end up with those laws, the adoption issues, the availability of people knowing what to do with the baby under certain circumstances, don't come into play if the child is dead, if you understand. This is the kind of measure that is a dramatic thing to do to save a child, and we realize that. And because we just didn't want to end up in a dumpster, which has happened, or on the side of the abandoned somewhere, the feeling was that it's possible that the rights of a child, I was hit on this, the child wants to have the right to know who their birth parents are, could be interfered with later in life, but the theory is at least the child would be alive because of the anonymity situation. I mean, I admit that. So
I have Senator Dukes, and then I have Representative Witt.
Madam Chair, our family is very fortunate. One of our children is adopted, and it is a child who, by all that is medically right, should not be alive because its mother didn't know where to take it. Thank you, Senator, for this bill.
Representative Witt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator, is there any other states that have adopted these kinds of statutes? What can you tell us about the evidence to date in terms of those statutes working and preventing children from being abandoned somewhere where they're likely not to survive or be harmed?
Well, I don't know if I have here, I'm looking through my materials.
LFO? Peter, if I might interrupt you, maybe LFO has something in her fingertips.
Madam Chair, Representative Witt, in the summary from the Judiciary Committee, the staff measure summary, there is some information on not the particular states where those laws have been adopted, the outcomes in those states, but a national survey overall on abandonment of newborns. And it says that there's, in 98, based on media reports, Department of Health and Human Services found 105 newborns had been abandoned, 33 of those being found dead. Now, that doesn't address specifically where those laws have been adopted. I believe one of the previous witnesses had indicated that a lot of these laws were still relatively new, and so that may be the most up-to-date information that they had.
Representative Witt, in California, since the bill has passed, four babies have been saved. Ohio, there's one. I know that. I'm just trying to pick through this in terms of the information in front of me. I cannot go to, there's not a lot of states that have done this or areas that have done it. I'm looking through some materials here. We know that California, which has just passed, we have four that have been saved, and Ohio's one. I can't, that's the best I can do at this time. The word is, I think the representative, the question about getting the word out is critical because it's starting to get out in these other states, and so they're starting to see some effect.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator, you say have been saved, but do we know that these children would not have been put up for adoption but for this, but for these new laws in California and these other states? I mean, do we really know that or not? I suspect we don't. We don't know what would have happened to these four babies if that law had not been effective.
The chair, if I don't know, Representative Witt, without actually interviewing the mothers, that's correct, and I don't know that as I sit here today talking to you. I just know that for whatever reason, they ended up in a hospital, and I'm not sure that, I will say that probably they would not have ended up in that hospital if the person wanted to have them adopted out. I don't think that they would have taken that step. That's the only thing I have to suggest, that for some reason they went to a hospital with the baby versus going to an adoption agency or working it that way. I'd have to tell you that, Representative, but that's some signal to me, and I agree with you, though, that why did a hospital versus take it to an, you know, I'll just have my baby adopted type of thing. So if you want to have your baby adopted, people will say, I'm going to have the baby, but I'll have it adopted, allowed to be adopted. I don't think they simply take it and leave it at a hospital anonymously unless they know there's a plan where they can do that and they're so threatened. You know, I was hoping the women would help me with this, but here we go. I got to say this, and this will get me in a lot of trouble. I didn't want this to be seen as a woman's bill, so I was very careful in my testimony and everything else to say mother or father. But it's interesting, when our expert witness came up from California, when this happens, it usually happens in the first 72 hours. That's what's going on in other states. And the women who testified, the nurses from Emanuel, Agassiz Emanuel, who really loved this bill, and others said, there are things going on right after a woman has a child that are unmanageable emotionally and everything else. Now, I'm not a woman, so I want to make it very clear here that I didn't quite understand that. But I'll tell you, there were some things in that room, all of a sudden, some women really coming together. And there are things going on, and that's where they could make a mistake for the rest of their life. And we're trying to say, wait, please, take it to the hospital, take it to the fire station. And it's that situation that we're talking about. And that is how it is. And there are so many women in that hearing room that day, it was electricity, that identify with that. Even those women who I suggest would never think of that, you'd think, there's something going on. So all I'm going to say, Representative Wheatley, is I have a feeling that since these babies in California were in a hospital, ended up in a hospital that way, as well as in Ohio, that probably we can say, we can't scientifically prove it. I'm not sure beyond a reasonable doubt or clear and convincing preponderance of evidence, Attorney Counsel. But I think we can I'm going to conclude the bill is the legislation saved those babies.
Representative, are you finished?
Yes, ma'am.
Senator Dukes?
Yeah, I think to me the most important part of the bill is the education piece. The mothers that are likely to drop off a newborn child in a safe haven are mothers who care about that child. But I suspect that there are also people who've been in denial about the pregnancy, which isn't at all unusual, right up to the point of birth, and probably didn't have prenatal care. So you're not probably talking about the healthiest kids in the world when they're born. And every moment is important to that child's survival. And so if a woman knows, because of all the publicity about it, that this is where a child can go and gets it even to a fire station, which can provide CPR and that sort of thing, there's a much better chance that that child will die. I guess I'm not so sure these kids would end up in dumpsters, but I think a fair number of them would end up dead because they didn't get the help they needed by the way.
Katie, would you come on up from Services to Children and Families and discuss just a little bit the testimony on what this would cost? I can't help but think of many of us were here when we had the signs put in all women's restrooms and places that alcohol and pregnancy doesn't mix. And I don't remember what the cost of that was, but every time I go into a restroom, I see that sign and think about putting that law in place to warn mothers that don't know that alcohol and pregnancy do not mix. And I can envision a little sentence on that sign that says something like this. Anyway, if you would share with us some of the discussion in the committee about the cost.
Of course. Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Katie King, and I'm from the Department of Human Services, Oregon Health Division. And Services to Children and Family is a sister division of ours over at the department. Of course, until House Bill 2294 passes, and then divisions will be abolished. But in response to your question about the fiscal impact for this bill, when we sat down with Senator Courtney and other stakeholders last fall, we said that if we did a large media campaign with billboards, that it would be quite expensive, and that we wouldn't be able to do it within existing resources. As many of you know, the budget picture has changed significantly in that time, and we started to look for ways that we could do something within existing resources. And just off the top of my head, some of the things that we could do would be sending out a media advisory, working with hospitals and other stakeholders about the provisions of the new law. We also send out a CD summary. It's a communicable disease summary to every single physician in the state of Oregon. And that's something that we could do. We could also put together educational materials to be distributed to hospitals and other groups. And during the last legislative session, we did receive a couple of bills without funding attached, and we were able to do a small focused effort within existing resources.
Thank you, Katie. Representative Butler, and then Representative Hayden.
Thank you. And Katie, your opinion is that this isn't going to be terribly expensive, and it can be done at least currently within current existing resources and resources to the department.
Madam Chair and Representative Butler, yes, we could do the activities that I just described.
Contact.
Yes, there is a provision in the bill, however, that would allow us to receive grants or gifts. And we also expect to work with the bill sponsors and other stakeholders to talk about what this educational campaign may contain. And another option is to look at doing public service type announcements if we could get some sort of funding or a donation for that.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, much of the work that we do in the legislature is larded with self-interest. I, too, participated in the fetal alcohol placard, and it was one of the proudest moments of my life. And every time I go into a restaurant and see that, I say a little prayer of thanks for all the young minds that have been saved because of that. It's a wonderful thing. I see this as another wonderful thing without a shred of self-interest. I'd be proud to vote for this.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Courtney. And if there's no more questions, we appreciate your testimony. Thank you very much. And I will close the works or the public hearing and open a work session on Senate Bill 199. Do you have anything you need to say?
Yes, I would like to say. Madam Chair, members of the committee, there's a handout that has attached to it the fiscal analysis that our office did, and then the summary from the Substantive Committee. There's been discussion about the advertising cost. The other point that I wanted to make was that there may be some small increase in SCF, State Office for Services to Children, Families, Foster Care, or Adoption Assistance. However, that would have to assume that these children would otherwise not come into their care at some point. And so we would also expect that it would be a very small number, if any. And so our fiscal impact basically wanted to highlight those issues, but we do believe that this can be absorbed by the agencies within their existing budget. The court system also indicated that there may be a small reduction in court costs because this would mean that perhaps one or two cases a year would not have to be prosecuted that otherwise might be. So analysis is that this is not a bill that has any significant fiscal impact, and we would recommend that you move it to full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Madam Chair, I move the recommendation of the legislative fiscal office to go to the full committee for due pass recommendation, recognizing that there's no material fiscal impact, and whatever fiscal impact there is can be absorbed within the current SCF budget.
You've heard Representative Butler's motion. Any discussion? Any objection? If not, so moved. We will now close the work session on Senate Bill 199 and open a work session on Senate Bill 5532, Contractors Board and Landscape Contractors.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, you have the Legislative Fiscal Office recommendations in front of you. With the committee's indulgence, I think I would like to move through the recommendations and then ask for a vote. Would that work?
For that, you want to sign.
Item number one, we're working with the Construction Contractors Board. Recommend approval of the revised current service level of $10,556,755, other funds, 66 positions, and 63.75 FTE. This has the standard assessment rate reduction, and there is also a current service level of reduction in package 090, which deletes $36,180 for base equipment replacement costs. This is based on the recommendation of the Subcommittee on Advancing E-Government. The Legislative Fiscal recommends approval of the following policies packages. 090, reduction, reduces the other funds limitation by 104.315 to reflect reduced 1999-01 telecommunication, attorney general, and expendable property expenditure estimates. This is in addition to the assessment reduction. Package 103, general contractor, HIAC exemption. There's a $21,600 revenue impact from this package, but no additional cost to the board. LFO package 1, adjustment of 102 for out-of-state travel. LFO package 2, adjustment of 81,625 and 1 FTE to reflect the semi-privatization of the Landscape Contractors Board. This is the phase out of the contract and the FTE that provides staff support to the Landscape Contractors Board. Amend the following policy packages. Policy package 100, staffing and reclassification. Add 117,953 in one position and FTE to fund positions and classification costs based on Department of Administrative Services Human Resources Division evaluation. What this package did was to create a standalone or separate deputy and a separate enforcement manager position. Package 101, rent and equipment, approve a package of $55,457, which includes the rent package and $1 for equipment replacement based on the recommendations of the Subcommittee on Advancing E-Government. The Subcommittee on Advancing E-Government recommended the following budget notes. The first budget note, I won't read them to you in the interest of time. The first budget note is a standard budget note that is directing all agencies to move their the first budget note directs the Department of Administrative Services Information Resource Management Division to conduct an annual review of the progress made by the Construction Contractors Board toward the goals of their technology plan, to report this review to the Joint Legislative Committee on Information Management and Technology in November of each year. Budget note 2 directs the Construction Contractors Board to update its technology plan with assistance and approval from DAP IR&D, including a review of their equipment needs and replacements, and to report to the Joint Legislative Committee on Information Management and Technology. At that time, the board can come back, and request an expenditure limitation increase of $85,205 for equipment replacement. That number represents the $36,000 that was in their base and the money that was in the limitation that was in their policy option package to replace about a third or a half of their workstations and computers. And budget note 3 is the standard budget note that is directing all agencies to move its public web server or website to the DAP IR&D facility. LFO is recommending denial of the following policy packages. Package 102, which is the contractor manual. Some of you were not here yesterday, but we had testimony about the fact that the manuals are actually the property of Experior, which is a for-profit entity that produces manuals for training. And the recommendation was to, for the construction contractors board to contract with Experior to shrink wrap and mail this manual to every contractor, even though those contractors, most of the contractors, do not need the manual in order to take the licensing test. It doesn't make a lot of sense from LFO's perspective that the board should act as a middleman. If a contractor wants a copy, they can always contact Experior and buy one from them.
Excuse me, Robin. Representative Hayden.
Madam Chair, I think that's an excellent idea, and it's consistent with what we did discuss yesterday, I think it was yesterday, about the fact of continuing education, where a number of professions follow continuing education, and this is a continuing education. And clearly there's no reason for them not to publish it directly from the proprietary owner. But my question is, where did this great idea come from? This is a good idea. But where did it come from? I don't remember it being discussed in committee.
Madam Chair, Representative Hayden, where did what idea come from?
That contractors purchase the books directly from the publisher.
That came from your staff, Representative Hayden.
Okay.
And it is a recommendation.
Staff recommendation.
Yeah.
Well, smart staff.
Madam Chair, Senator Dukes. I think it's worth noting, because I guess it frustrates me, that the material for this book came from a working group that the board had of volunteers who sort of donated their work product to the state of Oregon. Because we had the contract that allowed it, it's now been copyrighted by a private for-profit company, which would have something to do, I suspect, with the cost of it when the contractor goes to buy one.
Madam Chair, but if they're not required to buy it, doesn't the price come down?
I have no idea. It just seems to me that we ought not to be making our life more difficult by allowing folks to copyright our working product.
My second recommendation is to deny the funding for the interim construction fraud evaluation unit. This is a limitation that will continue support by the board for the construction fraud evaluation unit in the Department of Justice. The instruction to both Department of Justice and to the board has been that they should work together to resolve the issues involving law enforcement related to construction fraud. And so the limitation has been removed from both the Department of Justice's budget and from the Construction Contractors Board budget. If and when they reach consensus on how they want to deal with this, they can return to the Emergency Board for limitation. Package 105, Information Systems Specialist 3, Position Reclassification, recommend denial with the following budget note, and this was also the recommendation of the Subcommittee on Advancing E-Government. The Department of Administrative Services is requested to conduct an assessment of the Information Systems Unit of the Construction Contractors Board. The assessment should determine if the positions within the unit are appropriately classified, the internal relationships are appropriate, the salary structure and career path are appropriate, and there is a demonstrated business need that requires reclassification rather than reassignment of duties. If the Department of Administrative Services determines that the reclassification is the appropriate means to respond to the business need, the board may request reclassification approval from the Emergency Board. The board should fund the reclassification within the legislatively adopted budget through reductions in other areas of the budget. Excuse me. And with that, Legislative Fiscal Office recommends approval of a budget of $10,544,123 other funds, 56 positions, and 63.75 FTE.
Senator Duke, would you like to have some
information and what you...
Yes, Madam Chair.
If we could have someone from the agency come up and discuss the performance measures with us.
And I may have just missed something. I did ask the other day for a sheet explaining how, what the performance measures, actually how to read the chart, I guess, is what it comes down to, because I was hoping against hope that I was reading the chart incorrectly. But since what we hold the agency accountable to is their performance measures, ultimately it made sense to me that we should have a discussion on them. They've given them to us. Unless I'm, did I get a sheet? Did I miss something?
Good morning.
There was a sheet handed out yesterday.
Okay.
It should be in your material. If not, if
I
could get an extra copy
from the
board.
I looked through and I didn't see it.
Yeah. Chair Clarno, members of the committee, I'm Ken Fidel, administrator of the Construction Contractors Board. Senator Deese, there's a 6-page handout, CCB performance measures.
I don't have an extra one.
I don't have an extra
one. Ah, thank you. Okay. If there were things that concerned me, like, the second, you have new performance measures now, which are much better than the old ones. I mean, they actually get to performance, but you have one that says increase the percent of people who understand the rights and responsibilities of the consumer and the contractor and the role and authority of CCB. And according to your chart, 80% is the present number, so that 80% of the people who would be hiring a contractor, I assume, would know that. And your goal is 60%. Why would you have a lower goal than you currently achieve?
Chair Clarno, Senator Dukes, I was advised against not putting that number out. When we did a survey of people asking them what did they know before they came to CCB, they answered, 80% of them answered this way. Your suggestion at the last meeting that if we're going to measure this, we need to get somebody further removed from it, like building permits. And so the 80% we know is wrong. It is wrong, and we know it is. Our sampling just didn't work. And what I was attempting to do was to show that we have some measurements here, that we got a lot of work to do to figure out how to arrive at those figures. But
what do you plan to do with them? Because I had to tell you that I'm really frustrated with, and we've been given a very nice-looking set of performance measures that I think are indefensible and unrealistic. I mean, if your 80% number isn't that, and I suspect that if you're talking about all the people out in the public who may at some point decide that they want to hire someone to do building or remodeling or something that comes under your purview, that you're a long way from 80%. I was surprised to discover that what you were talking about was that 80% of the people who came to the CCB knew all of that. I would have thought that would have been much higher. But if all you're measuring is what percentage of the people who find their way to you have the adequate information, then I think in terms of service to the public, we've blown it big time. So... are the other performance measures gauged the same way based on a survey of people who have filed claims with the Construction Contractors Board?
Chair Clarno, Senator Dukes, our surveys at this point, we've done only one survey, and that would be a survey of about 1,300 of people who've had some action with the CCB. We plan to do surveys of exit surveys of claimants. We plan to do other surveys to get some of this information. Some of it, not all of it, is based upon surveys. So, but our problem with these, and I attempted to explain that, and obviously didn't do a very good job of it, is that these are new measures, and we're not there yet. If you've got further suggestions on how we might measure these, we think they're pretty good measurements, but how we measure them is where our problem is at this point. It
decrease in the number of contractors who intentionally operate without a contractor license. You say that at present there are 272. Do you know that, or is that the number that come before the Construction Contractors Board?
Chair Clarno, Senator Dukes, this was based upon a survey that we had conducted of cases in looking at all of those that had come to us, been referred to us as working while not licensed, and trying to determine how many of them were doing it as an oversight. There's a fair amount of oversight, failure to pay attention, and how many were doing it intentionally. That's how we would
How about the ones that never get reported to you? I mean, I think there's a way to find out about those as well. Not necessarily for enforcement, but just to find out what's out there. I mean, if you're saying that there are 272 people presently who, or maybe that's within the last year or the last biennium, who worked, who intentionally operated without a contractor's license, my guess is it's triple or quadruple that number. There are a lot of people out there doing, even if they're just small jobs, who need to be registered, who know full good and well that they should be. And I think until you get out and survey or ask the people who get building permits who are hiring these folks, that you're never going to know. I mean, it just, in terms of using these performance measures to make any kind of a decision, I don't think you can. And Madam Chair, that frustrates me no end. This is an agency for how many years CCB been in existence?
1971.
Okay. For 30 years has been out dealing with contractors and with the public, and can't figure out how to answer these questions in terms of how many people are doing what. And I have to say that is really frustrating to me. I don't know how we get closer to serving the public if we can't figure out what the problems are. And we can't figure out what the problems are unless we go out there and ask them. And apparently somebody didn't like the last set of performance measures and dumped on the agency, so now they've got a new set. But they're very unreliable numbers. So I couldn't tell you from this if I think they're headed in the right direction or not, because I don't know what the direction is.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, if I could recommend perhaps putting excuse me, language in the budget report again that we had in the last budget report.
That gives me hope.
Well, at least there was, Madam Chair, Senator Dukes, at least there was an attempt made
yes,
to revise the...
Yes. And they did a good job in the laying out the questions.
Right.
Anyway,
adding language that says the agency is instructed to work with the Legislative Fiscal Office with assistance from the Department of Administrative Services and other agencies to develop performance measures that will enable it to accurately track performance.
Okay.
And with that, we will understand that there's an expectation that we will continue to work on these measures and to refine them so that they do accurately track performance across time, so that the committee has some ability to evaluate, you know, how the agency is doing.
Because I think all you're doing is trying to make sure that when someone gets to you, contractor or public, that that process works smoothly. And clearly, we're a government agency. It isn't always going to work smoothly. But I think you have an obligation to work to try to avoid some of the problems to start out with. And you've got to sort of get outside the office and deal with... Talk to the people who are the user groups, both contractors and the public, in order to figure out how to do that.
I know you're frustrated.
I mean, a 30-year-old agency, you think they can figure out who the customer was?
Well, you're not likely to get, I think, Madam Chair, we're not likely to get any more accurate testimony than from this gentleman who's retiring in July. And he said that in committee, and I appreciated that. My concept, Madam Chair, is that in a free society, benchmarks, which I don't have much faith in anyway, they're guesses at best. Benchmarks and laws are really just an attempt to get at the head of the parade. We just want to get ahead of where the people are going, because in a free society, people don't obey the laws because we make them. We make the laws to custom fit the majority of what the people want to do, and then to tell the minority you got to get in the parade. So if they miss the mark on their performance measurements or their benchmarks, they can adjust them again when they find out where society wants to go with these things. That's my thought.
Yeah, sure.
Senator Dukes.
If they don't ask society, they're never going to find out. And coming to a legislative committee and saying that 80% of the people understand the rights and responsibilities of the consumer and the contractor and the role and authority of the CCB is ludicrous.
Any further discussion?
Madam Chair, I was out of the room when the comment from last session regarding the performance measurements was discussed, but I know that this is an issue that we need to have reintroduced back in. As if we don't do it at least as a comment, we've got to get something in there. I'd like to see it as a budget note.
Members of the committee, I don't think it's necessary to have a budget note. I think that the fact that we memorialize that as an instruction from the committee is sufficient to remind them that this needs to occur and sufficient to remind me that I need to follow up with the board to ensure that these issues are addressed.
Excellent.
Is there anyone, say, within DAS, Department of Administrative Services, or somewhere in our government that can help, you know, other people like this with the measurement? Senator Yee.
Well,
yes, you may want to consult Senator Yee.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my recollection was that the instructions last time, the other agencies that were referenced, the specific instruction was to work with the Oregon Progress Board, whose expertise it is. But there's also the Department of Transportation and a couple of other agencies, I think, that have done, from what I understand, a pretty good job of establishing performance measures and could help them establish measurements that are meaningful. And I think that's, you know, the issue isn't that they have performance measures, it's that they have performance measures that are meaningful both from a management standpoint in the agency and from a legislative standpoint so that we can take a look at their performance over time. Yeah.
Madam Chair, this is just a process question. With there being less and less institutional history in this building all the time, I guess I'm questioning why not a budget note. That seems to be a way to memorialize the concerns in a way that transcends just an instruction so that when it comes up that the legislative fiscal office is aware of it. If it's a big enough concern that it seemed to concern at least two members of the committee, why not put it as a budget note?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, you certainly are welcome to do that. If you're going to do that, I would establish some reporting requirements, perhaps to the Joint Legislative Audit Committee. And if you would like that, I can conceptually draft it and get the co-chair's approval. I'm trying very hard not to hold up this budget.
And you do have to get you're supposed to get the co-chair's approval before any questions.
But if we understand there's a conceptual draft of it, then, and we know that it's a performance measure and it had previously been commented upon,
right.
and I think that it's been substantially memorialized by Senator Dukes, I think we could move forward with it at that
right.
point.
Right. If you could just instruct me to draft
Let's put that,
that
in the
and,
form of a motion with the rest of the budget.
Madam Chair, with that, I would put that in the form of a motion of an additional budget note so that we have those performance measurements, which have previously been memorialized in the form of comments, and that they be instructed to return, that the CCB be instructed to return in the interim to the Joint Audit Committee to give a report as to the outcome of, first of all, the establishment of realistic performance measurements, and secondly, then a second visit to the audit committee to go ahead and give us an update on
the
those particular measurements, their progress on those measurements. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And then I would like to make an additional comment relative to 104, the denial of 104. I want to make certain that we know that Pete Shepard from the Department of Justice had been in previously, and to continue to have the board work with, to, I say to the board and the Department of Justice, been directed to work together to identify the best method to address the issue. It appears that they were at a substantial impasse relative to the working together at that particular point, and there continues to be, in conjunction with the budget notes that we were just talking about relative to construction fraud and the public's knowledge of it, there continues to be some issues there. And so I want to make absolutely certain that relative to the denial of Package 104, which basically provides that they could come back, that there is there's no agreement that currently exists. The package is not being approved. However, the Construction Contractors Board could come back to the Emergency Board in the interim, following some other discussion relative to the overall construction fraud issue, and bring back a package which could be approved for private investigation and amounts up to $574,541 and in accordance with the denial of policy option package 104, which could then be utilized, which amount could then be utilized for an additional investigation and work done within the agency. And I would like to have that as a part of the public record as we proceed with that.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the intent right now is to return both the Department of Consumer and Business Services and the Construction Contractors Board to the status quo that existed prior to the legislation that created all of this discussion. And it is my hope that between now and whenever that some agreement can be reached on the best way to deal with construction fraud, that narrow piece of the construction industry that apparently is causing some problems. And so I would hope that both parties would return to the Emergency Board with an agreement, and that there be then some decision made on whether and how to proceed.
Thank you, Robin. But Madam Chair, may I say that if ORS 701-290 is somehow modified or deleted at that point, then the only party that would have to return would just be the board itself to tell us how they are addressing. And again, that speaks to where Senator Dukes would like to have, you know, some definitive plan with definitive results. What is it they say? Lax plans get lax results, and definitive plans get definitive results. So,
but Representative Butler, I guess I have a question. If ORS 701.290 is deleted from the statute, they do not have the expenditure authority.
They would have to return to get the expenditure authority to the Emergency Board.
Madam
for
Chair, members of the committee, they already have investigators. The question is whether or not to add additional investigators to address construction violations, which is basically their responsibility, is to deal with the civil part of this process. Where there is a debate, and what is unclear is how to deal with those violations that then become criminal by the nature of the repetitive nature of what they're doing or some other factor. And it is how to deal with that narrow slice that needs to be dealt with. And so I believe that really it does take both parties to address this issue. However, if the Construction Contractors Board also has a plan for improving their dealing with their responsibilities under the statute, then certainly they could come forward with a plan to increase their investigation activities.
I believe you've got two motions, or the motion was to amend two things, the conceptual budget note for the performance measures,
yes,
and the
and then to
104.
To make certain that 104 provides that the CCB within their own prerogative and purview, after they have
after they have examined the issues, that they can continue to address it with private investigations.
There's no need to add that. That's okay. Already their authority under
right.
the law.
Right. Okay.
So there really is no need to amend.
But no amendment to the note is just an understanding that they have that ability to return
right.
to get additional.
And I will make sure that the budget report reflects this discussion and what the expectation is in terms of what the Construction Contractors Board should do in terms of their investigation activities.
With that, Madam Chair, I would move that we approve the budget of the Construction Contractors Board in accordance with this discussion and the notes provided to us by Legislative Fiscal Office, in accordance with the recommendation of Legislative Fiscal Office, and in accordance with the additional notes, additional budget notes conceptually, which we've approved, in the amount of $10,544,123 of other funds and 66 positions, meaning 63.75 FTE for the Construction Contractors Board.
You've heard the motion before us. Discussion? Objection? If not, so approved.
I move that we then, let's see. Will it be, this is a line item on that particular, do we want to go to the landscapes next before we move through?
And I can do this very
okay.
quickly.
Okay.
First of all, I'm recommending approval of the current service level budget, which is $431,892. And then I am recommending approval of a reduction of $225,329 to reflect the transfer of the Landscape Contractor Board to semi-independent agency status in the second year of the biennium. This is done because the board only needs limitation for the first year. They become semi-independent the second year. And with that, for the bill itself, I am recommending the following amendments. In Section 1, delete $12,151,695 and insert $10,544,123. That is for the Construction Contractors Board. In Section 2, delete $434,093 and insert $206,563. That's for the Construction Contractors Board. Landscape Contractors Board.
And procedurally, Madam Chair, just one question relative to House Bill 2127 as being gross. Do we make the adjustments to that fee bill before we do the before we make any approval of Senate Bill 5532?
Well, we could do that. It probably would be prudent to do that since we probably don't want to approve a half-year budget and then have the semi-privatization
right.
bill.
So I need to open a work session on
2127.
I need to open a work session on House Bill 2127C. I know the House is going into session 3 minutes ago.
Madam Chair, I got the members excused until
yes.
10:30.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, this is the same recommendation that you had in front of you a couple of days ago. The recommendations are to approve House Bill 2127 that creates the Landscape Contractors Board as a semi-independent agency, approve three limited duration positions and 0.38 FTE and a budget of $53,881 other funds. This establishes positions in the last quarter of 2002 to enable the board to make the transition to the semi-independent status. And with that, I recommend that the committee move HB 2127B to the full Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation.
Are you looking for three motions? Why don't I do it
yes.
that way? Madam Chair, I would move that we approve HB 2127B and create the Landscape Contractors Board as a semi-independent state agency.
Heard the motion before us. Any discussion?
I'm sure.
Representative Hayden.
Madam Chair, I'm going to vote for this. I had a conference with staff and had some historic background on other agencies who've been granted this privilege. But I just want to say, and not in relation to this particular agency, but I want to make a general statement in that in the public interest, human beings what they are, being what they are, that they do need to be watched. There are people who will defraud the public, so they have to be watched. And that is not just these people, but surgeons or airline pilots or plumbers or the state police. But the poet once said, who will watch the watchers? And very often in these mission statements I see that number one is to police those who would encroach on our turf and to be sure they do not. And I take exception to that. When the essence of the mission is to perpetuate the power of the watchers. And I don't know how to get a handle on that with a couple hundred agencies and commissions and so on. But it's something that really bothers me. If we all did act in the public interest, then we wouldn't need the boards anyway. So I'm going to vote yes, but I'm going to say that it's a matter of concern that an agency should exist in order to serve the public and not to serve themselves, whether it's 38 people or 2,000 people.
Thank you, Mr. Senator. Further discussion? Any objection? Not so moved. Representative Johnson.
Madam Chair, I would move that we approve three limited duration positions in 0.38 FTE and a budget of 53,881 other funds to establish positions the last quarter of 2002 to effect the transition to a semi-independent agency status.
Heard the motion before us. Any discussion? Any objection? Not so moved.
Madam Chair, I would move that we move HB 2127B to the full Ways and Means with a two-task recommendation.
You've heard the motion before us. Any discussion? Any objection? Not so moved. Representative Johnson, would you like to carry that to the full committee?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Thank you. And in the House? And in the House, would you carry that in the House?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Senator Duke, how do you feel about this?
I can carry this one.
Thank you very much.
We're ready for a motion then on Senate Bill 5532 as amended to the full Ways and Means.
I think we are.
Madam Chair, I then move Senate Bill 5532 as amended to the full Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation.
Heard the motion before us by Representative Butler. Any discussion? Any objection? Not so moved.
And I need carriers.
And we need carriers for this bill. Any volunteers? Representative Haven, would you like to carry this, or would you like to have Representative Butler?
I think he volunteered first.
And he did volunteer.
Gee, my friend.
Senator Dukes, how do you feel?
Madam Chair, I can't guarantee you that I'm going to cast an aye vote for this bill at any other point in the juncture, so you probably ought to carry this one.
Senator, I will carry. Thank you. Okay, next on our agenda is the work session. I'll close the work session on 2127 and Senate Bill 5532 and open a work session on Senate Bill 5507. I do thank you, Senator Payton, on our trip to Klamath Falls yesterday. And Representative Johnson for holding down the fort yesterday. Appreciate it very much. I told Robin that I was going to Klamath Falls and that Representative Butler would chair the committee. And I got to Klamath Falls and see Representative Butler. I wonder how they're going to manage. And I understand you managed very well. So thank you very much.
And I told Robin that Senator Dukes was a senior member, and she should chair the committee.
But Senator Dukes wasn't here yesterday. It was out of my district.
I bet Robin was kind of wondering where we all were. Anyway, I appreciate your fine work. I heard you did an excellent job and got through business very well, and I thank you for that.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, Representative Robin.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, and again, there are arrows on this handout that indicate where we last were.
Okay.
And we were last on the building codes division. I believe that we had approved everything up to the final budget amount for the building codes division.
Okay.
And so I would recommend that the committee approve a budget of $26,613,554 other funds, $200,000 non-limited other funds for the building codes division, and 117 positions and 172.88 FTE.
Madam Chair.
Senator Duke.
Can I just need a clarification. Because I think I should know this because I've asked it 10 times, and I think I finally got an answer, but I don't recall. Those additional fees, we did something. I don't know that we got a list, but there was something.
Madam Chair, Senator Duke, my recollection is that they indicated to us that the only additional fee was the potential $25 electrical fee, which they don't believe is going to be imposed because there's statutory language out there to impose a licensing fee.
And we did a budget note on all of those.
Right. There's
rural fees.
You approved a budget note that directs the building codes division to examine program activity levels, fee revenues, expenditures, and central service charges.
Okay. Thank you. I knew I should know it.
Any further discussion before we have a motion? Okay. Mr. Johnson?
Madam Chair, I would move that we approve a budget of $26,613,554 other funds and $200,000 non-limited other funds for the Building Codes Division with 177 positions and 172.88 FTE.
You've heard the motion before us. Any discussion?
Discussion.
Representative Butler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to make certain that that in that process that the manufactured homes, that fee revenue, that we were not approving the $30 to $40 fee increase in that process. Is that the understanding?
That's correct. LFL assures us that's correct.
Okay.
Any further discussion? Any objection? If not, so moved.
Now I will walk you through the recommendations on the Central Support Services Division. The recommendation is to approve the revised current service level of $30,680,899 other funds and $1,550,000 non-limited other funds, 186 positions, 185.88 FTE. These are the standard reductions.
The last bullet just before arrow 11.
Are you on? I'm on page 4 or 5.
Five and five.
So I'm on
4 or 5.
I'm on
4 or 5. Sorry, I'm with you now.
Okay, sorry.
I'm sorry, you were current service level and I jumped over to the whole budget. I apologize.
Don't worry. Maybe we had a typo here. recommend approval of the budget, the following budget note that was approved by, recommended by the Subcommittee on Advancing E-Government, which is the same one that is in all agency budgets, which is to move the website to the DAS website. Approval request from the Subcommittee on Advancing E-Government that the Department of Administrative Services unscheduled $336,000 in funding for security infrastructure pending review and approval of the plan by the Department of Administrative Services Information Resources Management Division and a report to the Joint Legislative Committee on Information Management and Technology. The Subcommittee recommends the report be made by no later than November of 2001. Approve adjusted policy option package 171, risk management, human resource services, and outreach, including $139,384 other funds, one position, and FTE. approve a reduction of $1,017 in out-of-state travel, and with that, recommend approval of a budget of $30,819,266 other funds, $1,550,000 non-limited other funds, 188 positions, and 186.88 FTE for the Central Support Services Division.
I'm sure the only comment that I would make is that here again, when we look at that 1% reduction, that's $1,000+, that means that you've got $101,000 of nearly $102,000 of out-of-state travel before you make any reduction in it. And in a year when we're burying our farmlands and other things in the state very rapidly, our economy is not such that a lot of those folks, any travel they do out of state, will be looking for work. So,
Representative Butler, I appreciate your comment. When I went to the co-chairs to get the approval for the 1% reduction, I just wanted to bring out-of-state travel attention to our committees, because they're doing that in all budgets, and it certainly does bring it to our attention. And next year it will not be 1%. It will be greater than that.
Thank you. With that, I would make a motion to approve legislative fiscal recommendation relative to the Central Support Services Division to approve a budget of $30,819,266 other funds and $1,550,000 non-limited other funds, 188 positions, 186.88 FTE of the Central Support Services Division.
Heard the motion before us. Any discussion? Any objection? If not, so moved.
Madam Chair, I'm going to recommend that the subcommittee adopt the budget and the amendment to Senate Bill 5507. I am not going to recommend that the subcommittee move this to pull yet. We still have a budget note waiting to be resolved having to do with pawn brokers, but I would like to have as much of the work done as we possibly can. So with that, Madam Chair, I would recommend that the subcommittee approve the revised budget of 166,581,794 other funds, 305,738,487 non-limited other funds, 1,110 positions, and 1,101.76 FTE.
I would just say that at 7:45 this morning, I had a conference call to try to work with the people involved in the pawn brokers. And came up with another two paragraphs, which our LFO people worked on, obviously, before 7:45 this morning. I think we had agreement, but we have some other folks to bring on board. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And never have so few held up so much.
Thank you, Winston.
And I'm just about sick and tired of it.
Madam Chair,
yes.
Can I ask what the issue is at this point? I thought we solved them all.
There's just a tremendous amount of issues between a couple of lobbyists, the lobbyists for the pawn brokers and also for the buy and sell people, and the other, some of Sandrick Caden and Representative Hayden and Representative Butler have worked with the various groups on this, and we're still having some problems. So we'll come to a decision one of these days. But right now, yes, Representative.
I was about to.
But I would appreciate that.
Notwithstanding the pawn broker provide,
yes.
I would move that we approve the revised budget of $166,581,794 other funds and $305,738,487 non-limited other funds with 1,110 positions and 1,001.76 FTE. 1,101.76 FTE. Thank you.
Not to be
so
anal about numbers.
I know, it's just Mr. Cynthia. DNA,
the numbers,
you know,
man,
hereditary.
You've heard the motion before us. Any discussion? Any objection? If not, approved.
Madam Chair, I move that the subcommittee amend Section 1 of Senate Bill 5507 to delete 172-363-152 and it insert 166,581,794.
That's your recommendation. Okay, for a motion?
Yes.
Madam Chair, I would move that we amend Section 1 of SB 5507 to delete 172-363-152 and insert 166-581-794.
Discussion. Any objection? So moved.
Madam Chair, I would request that we carry this bill over until tomorrow for the final motion, which is to move this to full Ways and Means for the purposes of resolving the final budget note issue.
Okay. Anything else before us?
We just go ahead and announce the carryover of Senate Bill 5507 to tomorrow on the schedule so that we can post it accordingly.
Representative Butler has a motion before us. Any discussion? Any objection? If not, so moved. And we are adjourned until tomorrow.
Thank you, Madam Chair.